Welcome back to In the House, the podcast where we talk about all issues affecting Bay Equini and how I'm bringing your voice and these issues to the House of Commons in Ottawa as your member of Parliament. Over 6 months ago, we spoke about housing on our premiere episode of In the House. We are in a crisis, not enough homes, dead last in housing in the G7, sky-high prices, not enough affordable housing, and increased homelessness. We are still in a crisis. In fact, the crisis has gotten more dire. We heard from our Equini home builders.
If we can open up supply and reduce the time in getting shovels into the ground, we can definitely improve this. Regionally, we don't have a plan in place. In 2016, Belleville CMA was named number 3 in core housing need behind Toronto and Victoria across Canada. That's an important statistic.
From Pierre Poliev.
We can't get things built in this country. It takes 7 to 10 years for a developer to go from buying a land to getting full permitting to building on it. It's very difficult to transform properties. So to get permits to take an office tower that's now emptied because people are working from home and convert it into rental, or to take an old Victorian mansion in Belleville and convert it into a 7-unit apartment building. There's more paperwork involved in those kinds of things sometimes than there is material and labor costs.
And from Grace Inn and from Welcoming Streets on homelessness, as well as from the Love Psalm Project in Prince Edward County. So what are we talking about today as we build the case for more housing? We now know more of what we need. It's trying to solve it. We need 10,000 more housing units by 2031. And I've been very vocal about 1,500 to 2,500 more rental units. I'm a hotelier. I know that we build more supply and outstrip demand, prices go down. No landlord wants to have an empty apartment building or apartment rental unit. So therefore, that price will go down in order to fill it. We need more affordable housing. Affordable probably is $700 to $900 for rent. That's what maybe one or two people can afford. And we know it takes one step to end up homeless, but did you know it takes 3 steps to get out of homelessness? We need more of the 3 things that help the homeless: shelters, transitional homes, and affordable rental units. Today, we're going to continue to swing the hammer on the housing issue as we look for new collaboration to build our community out of the housing quagmire, to ease our homelessness, to have our youth being able to afford shelter, and just to build more homes. We're going to talk all about that today with Ruth Eswick from the Equini Home Builders, Vino Nerona from Not Alone Team, Bob Cottrell from All Together Housing, Phil Spry from Springale, and Matt Genereux, our housing critic from the Conservative Party, as we continue to tackle housing on In the House.
Mr. Speaker, it's my pleasure to rise as the first time as Conservative MP for the Bay of Quinte.
This is the In the House podcast with your voice in the House of Commons, Bay of Quinte MP Ryan Williams.
When it comes to housing, we need to talk about hitting goals. And really, it comes down to what do we need to hit the nail on the head, so to speak, in order to build more housing in the region. I'm joined today by Ruth Eswick, the CEO of Equini Home Builders. Ruth, thanks so very much for joining us again.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
It's oftentimes stated that government built homes, but in reality, it's people that build homes. Is that correct?
I would agree with that.
You spoke last time of the Eastern Ontario Growth Strategy. And tell us a little bit more about that and what's happening in Eastern Ontario.
So I think there needs to be a tremendous focus on Eastern Ontario and its growth. Do we have an existing Eastern Ontario growth strategy in place? Not to my knowledge, but I think we need one. I think there's significant challenges associated with bringing more housing supply online to support that growth. And the Ontario home builders have been talking about the elephant in the room for several years, and the fact that we need over 1 million homes in Ontario. That number has been obviously moved to about 1.5 million. But how do we expect to catch up if we continue to do all the same things?
So we talk about targets, and we've had some numbers since we've last spoke. But 10,000 homes by 2031 seems to be that number. I've talked openly about we need rental. So to make housing affordable, the most affordable housing for individuals is rental, as long as we have more of it. And I've talked about 1,500 to 2,500 of those units of the 10,000. Are we able to hit those targets?
I think the short answer is no, especially if we continue to do things the way we've always done them.
And how do we fix that? How do we incentivize, I guess, builders to build more homes? How do we make this happen?
Well, I've heard people say, you know, I've talked many times in several conversations about how do we incentivize builders to build more. And there seems to be a perception that, you know, builders should just build more affordable homes and more rental units. And I think that would be, I wish that that were the answer. I wish things were that easy. And I often say that we don't blame our restaurants or our grocery stores for food insecurity issues. So why do we always look to residential construction to just build more affordable homes? And I think that's a really important thing to note, because I believe that the issue is a community problem and we need to focus on new ways of looking at solutions. And incentivizing is great, but the red tape associated with those incentives often costs more in time and resources. So I think we need to have a greater focus on out-of-the-box thinking, innovative solutions, collaborations, non-traditional partnerships is another thing that I talk often about, and building on those models and having open conversations with all levels of government and bringing people together to create solutions around housing.
Ruth, we often don't know the impact of what the home builders is worth to this region. What is the economic impact of home building in the Bay of Quinte region?
Well, I think as an industry, residential construction is important to the local economy. According to recently released statistics from the Canadian Home Builders Association on our economic impact, our industry locally represents 7,054 jobs, $481 million in wages, and over $940 million in investment. So quite a significant economic impact.
You've talked before about pre-zoning. So pre-zoning important?
I believe so. I believe, especially when we're talking about housing affordability projects, I think fast-tracking those projects is important, but also, you know, just addressing some of the red tape that exists. And, you know, I think there's more than just bottlenecks that happen in the process. I think there's several things that happen along the way that we need to educate people on in terms of bringing more units online and the process associated with that. How do we simplify that, make it faster and more efficient?
So what are the bottlenecks? So how do we get through them and break through them to build more homes?
So I think we know what the bottlenecks are, and some of them we don't really talk about in a public forum. Like the time from shovel-ready lands to project completion is one we hear about. Red tape is another, but NIMBYism is one that I believe plays a major role in delaying development. And I think those are the things that we need to have conversations about more often, and bring to light, educate people on, you know, why bringing housing online is more important. Because it's very simple to say builders just need to build more homes. But when developments are delayed by all of those things plus others, it has an impact on the community. And, you know, I think it's important for us to address these in more of a forum where we include all of the stakeholders, you know, all levels of government, as well as our industry, other industries, the public, all of that kind of a forum where we can sit down and talk about innovative solutions to some of these challenges.
I certainly sat on planning council when I was a Belleville city councillor. I saw the challenges from NIMBYism anytime there was any development. Certainly, I think when I've spoke about it, I've listened to podcasts on housing. How to kind of solve this, I feel, is that we need to see more communication from the municipalities, meaning that when we have official plans right now, they're normally about 15 years, I think, in Prince Harry County's case, to develop the official plan, which only lasted 4 years. I think that planning, especially when you talked about Eastern Ontario growth strategy, should be about 25 to 50 years. And I think it should be mandated to the municipalities to have to communicate once a year to their residents on where residential growth will be going. If we're talking about targets, let's say per year, if it's going to be 10,000 units that Belleville, as one example, should be building maybe 400 or 500 of those units, I think residents shouldn't be surprised to know in a certain neighborhood that perhaps this is where development's going to be going. Do you think that's a good solution?
I do think it's a good solution. I think it would also be great to understand how many rental units are currently being planned for each municipality. And then from there, how many of those are actually coming to that state of project completion. And then I think we should add in the amount of time that it takes to bring those units online. Because as you said, you know, councils work in 4-year increments in terms of the politics, and that council changes every 4 years. So how are we measuring what we're actually bringing online during that 4-year time? And, you know, where's the accountability in that?
Ruth, we've talked about educating councils, having more communication. What do you think the Oquinny Home Builders can be doing more with the municipalities?
Well, as I said, every 4 years, we have a new municipal council in municipalities across the region. Oftentimes, we're revisiting the same issues that we had with previous councils when it comes to land development and building, but we have to begin from square one to bring those issues to the forefront. So I would love to see councils across the region adopt a residential construction 101 session for their councils following election as part of their training, for example. It would give them an opportunity to understand residential construction from our perspective and help look for opportunities up front to address challenges.
Thank you so much, Ruth. Fantastic measures. Let's get through the bottlenecks. Let's make sure we find targets, how to communicate them, and finding the accountability. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Homelessness has doubled in the last 5 years in our region. It only takes one step to become homeless, that much is for certain, but it takes three steps to get out. One of the groups who have done the most for homelessness is the Not Alone team in Quinney. I'm joined today by Vino Nirona, a board member for Not Alone team. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about Not Alone team and what you do.
So Not Alone Team Quinty is a grassroots anti-poverty non-for-profit organization. We're working to alleviate homelessness in our community. So currently we run 5 different programs. We have a meal program, outreach and referral to community services and resources program. We have a pet foster program and a holiday program. So our mission is actually to provide services to the poor, the hungry, and those that are residentially challenged. And we do that through outreach and meals and food drives and definitely advocacy.
And how many people do you serve at this point?
I'd say somewhere between 150 and 200 people.
You have a new program that's been pitched to Belleville City Council, and it's about Tiny Shelter Community. Tell us about that project.
What Not Alone Team Quinty is stepping up and looking to create is a tiny shelter or a tiny home community for our homeless individuals. We're not wanting to recreate the wheel, but looking at other communities in Ontario and in Canada that have done similar projects and take what has worked in those communities and bring it to the Quinty region, but make it our own, because every community is different. And so we're looking to create that tiny shelter idea in our community.
In terms of what we've talked about, you know, shelter being the number one thing we need, support systems. How do you find the support systems working right now in our community when it comes to mental health and addictions, and in ensuring we're helping people find jobs or get trained, or just helping people who have really found themselves probably at the lowest part of their life sometimes when they become homeless? Do we need more supports? Do we find we have quite a few of those? We have good community members?
I think in our region, we've got great support. Like, we've got a lot of different programs that are offered in our community. I see there is a gap in shelter as like in individual, like people having a roof over their head, but the structures are in place for the support system, and having, you know, the programs brought together to support people, I think that's the gap, like just bringing everyone together and working together.
I know you're a grassroots organization. How are you funded? How do you get money for Not Alone Team?
So we are all volunteer run, like 100% volunteer run. And so we do fundraising. Like we had a golf tournament that we put on over the summer and raised some funds. We did a yard sale last week. We're funded by our community.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We need more and we need to do more to take care of the problem. But the hardest part is that there is no one-step solution to solve homelessness, not even two. It's three. So it's three times as hard. And we need to ensure we start putting this three-step solution to each of our governments. Thank you to Not Alone Team for what you're doing for step one, which is taking care of providing shelter and just taking care of our homelessness here in Belleville.
Thank you for having me.
The definition of affordable housing has sometimes been opaque. What exactly is affordable these days, and how do we build more affordable homes? Bob Contrell and Phil Spry have been involved with housing projects, or in other words, walking the walk when it comes to real affordable housing. They have a partnership that's very unique with Altogether Housing and Springale Developments. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
I'm going to start with a very basic question, but very complex at the same time. What exactly is affordable housing?
Well, we know that the provincial guideline here says that affordable is at or below average market rent. But for us, as Altogether Springale, we are always below. So if you hear Altogether Springale, you're going to know we're always below average market rent, and we are actually 20 to 30% below average market rent. Much of that is dictated by government funding. In other words, if you want to access government funding, you have to provide at least 20% below average market rent in order to access that funding.
What would be affordable housing in terms of a dollar figure in Quinney region right now?
Approximately $700.
$700.
$700 a month.
And do we know what is the average of rent in this region right now?
The average for a one bedroom, the stats that we're using from Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation is $1,125 for a one bedroom.
And that's what we're seeing right now in this region. And
we're seeing actually much higher than that.
Yes.
But $1,125 is the average market rent.
Okay.
For one bedroom.
Their data is not always up to date.
No. Tell us about your partnership and your project. What makes you unique?
Our partnership is a joint venture. And with the joint venture, each of us keep our own identity. But then we extract, I guess, the benefits from each other. Bob's expertise is put in, and my expertise is taken.
One of you is non-for-profit, one is up for profit. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
So, and Bob, you're the Altogether Housing, the non-for-profit.
We are definitely the not-for-profit folks. Okay.
So tell us your mandate and how, sure. what part of the partnership do you contribute to?
We are, our mandate is to provide housing options for low-income individuals, vulnerable communities. And traditionally, we have been providing transitional housing for those low-income individuals. But at some point, we decided you have to transition to something, and the transitioning is to permanent housing. So we said we want to do permanent housing. And we're too small an agency to take that on. So we met with Phil, and we saw a common vision and common values, and we were fortunate that Phil decided to work with us in terms of providing the more permanent housing piece of our mandate. That was really, we could not have got funding from CMHC without his experience and background, both in terms of development and property management. So he checked off the boxes for us in both categories, and that's how we got started on the Great St. James project.
And Phil, you could, as a private developer, just go on your own and do your own developments and probably charge up to $2,500 a unit. Why are you attracted to this project? What made you want to do this partnership?
Well, it's to help look after the vulnerable people, but also with Bob involved or with Altogether involved, they look after the tenants. I've rented to the agencies that Bob's involved with for years, and they've always been very, very good to me and helped me with the tenant. Now, with Bob in charge. He supports all of the agencies and organizes it. He organizes the whole partnership agreement with the tenants, and so everything runs smooth.
And so what I found was very really innovative about how you're doing this project, besides the partnership you have, is when you're building these units, you're doing half and half. So half affordable and half market. But even the market, yeah, it was still affordable in my mind, of 1,100 and something a month, right? So to explain to other developers and to other investors, what makes that model work to do half and half, half affordable, half market rent?
Well, the market rent helps it to make it not only sustainable but profitable, of course, and the affordable part with the funding helps along with the affordable, and if we can get the government to give us some more incentives in interest rates or something along that line, then it would be beneficial to us.
Plus, you get a different community when you've got the mix of affordable and market rent. The market rent people tend to be, they could be in the trades, they could be professionals versus individuals, a vulnerable community. So it's a much more interesting community. First of all, it's more sustainable, as Phil has pointed out, in terms of that mixed income, but it's also a more inclusive community. When you have only affordable, I think sometimes we're looking at ghettoizing, or it becomes that building in people's mind, in the community, and you don't want that. You want people to feel that they are part of the community, and part of that community is seeing people get up and go to work and coming back from work, and a fair amount of activity around the building. And that's the aspect that I really like at Great St. James.
Excellent. Tell us about how the government has helped to fund, or what some of the bottlenecks have been in funding this project. So is there money available, and what kind of bottlenecks exist?
Well, there certainly is money available. In fact, that was our motto for altogether, was follow the money. And of the different programs that were being offered by the federal government, there was called the Co-Investment Fund. And the co-investment fund clearly targeted vulnerable communities, which is why when we hooked up with Phil, we said, okay, we're going after our target here is the vulnerable communities. Here's the funding that's available for us. In fact, there was a greater incentive for the not-for-profit, just in terms of how much you had to come to the table with. So that was an important incentive for us too, in terms of our controlling interest in the new project. Was there was very little equity that we had to have or provide, and we don't have any equity except the buildings and selling off our own buildings. So that was a terrific incentive for us to get started with the co-investment fund. And it's interesting, the co-investment fund has now highlighted our partnership in the kind of national housing strategy as one way to get to more housing. But that was our main incentive from the altogether point of view. Phil's incentive may have been different.
Yeah, well, my incentive was for the co-investment. Well, I couldn't get the co-investment. They've changed the rules, and so I have to have a nonprofit organization to partner up with. But the government they promote our situation, which is a for-profit and a not-for-profit, because of the different things that they bring to the table. The not-for-profit brings in perpetuity of the affordable housing. It's not just the agreement says 20 years. Well, they're going to be there forever. You know, it's always going to be affordable. So there's different aspects of the situations.
You know, when we look at one of the solutions to housing, I've been very clear on targets. So we need to set targets to 10,000 units by 2031. The home builders have stated there's no way we're going to hit that right now. Of that, I've stated at least 1,500 new rental apartments are needed, maybe up to 2,500, depending on what we need going forward. So we know that, well, if I asked the two of you, could you build 2,500 units in 8 years? The answer is probably no, not quite. But how do we replicate what you're doing across the region and across Canada?
This is actually a good start. It's letting people know that there's a model there. And particularly if you're a small not-for-profit, we were in Kingston, we did a quick presentation in Kingston back in May sometime, and small not-for-profits are wondering if they can even do this, we would say this is a model that you may want to take on in terms of find your Phil Spry somewhere in your area. And we, you know, we're optimistic enough to believe that there are one or two, he's rare, okay, there are at least one or two in your area that you can find who want to make a contribution to their community, who want to do something good, who want to turn a profit. Those are all benefits that are available to individuals who become involved in the housing piece. So we would say, number one, take a look at our model, see what are the parts that work. We have been taking, I think since May, our presentation, I've had at least four or five, including down as far as Nova Scotia, inquiring about our model as being a model that could be replicated there. I also know that more affordable housing developers are looking at the mixed income model. They really see that as the future, both in terms of sustainability and also in terms of what kind of community do you want to have at the end of the day when you've got that bricks and mortar? What kind of community is that that you're looking at? So it can be replicated, but first find your Phil.
Could you ever work with more than one Phil? Could you have multiple Phils?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, and that's good to know for communities. If they had one organization, could they meet with several investors?
Yes.
And Phil, you know, something we talked about was more incentives from the government to help you do more. Would a 0% interest loan program work? Would more of having a loan system that work? I mean, talk to me just real quick about grants versus loans. Which ones are more beneficial to you?
I think the loans are more beneficial. Well, for one thing, the government will get their money back, so they can give you more money. And if you get the more loan you get, then the less investment you have to have of your own. So it's return on investment for the private developer. You know, they're going to want the best return on investment that they can get. Well, if they can be incentivized by the government to have money that they don't have to put in as much of their money, well, then they're going to come on board.
Well, thank you very much on behalf of the region for the work you're doing and for the partnership that you've set a model for not only here, but across Canada. And certainly if anyone wants to get a hold of you, how do they do so?
The best way to reach me is through our email, altogether.housing@gmail.com, or you can check out our website, altogetherhousing.ca.
Fantastic.
And my email's on Altogether's website also, so it's spryzy2003@yahoo.ca.
Interest rates are going up as the government now finally attempts to quell the inflationary bubble that has been going on for quite some time now. It has cooled housing, but prices still remain quite high. The prices in the Bay of Quinte region for housing have not really cooled compared to the jumps in the last 2 years, but certainly we haven't seen as many homes sold. Welcome this morning to housing critic Matt Genereau. Matt, what's going to happen with the housing market in Canada?
What's going on in the housing market? Great question. Right now, we're seeing interest rates going higher and higher, which Trudeau hopes will stabilize the market. But the problem is that everything is just becoming more expensive in the short and the long term. So people who've successfully purchased a home during COVID are seeing drastic increases to the variable rate. Some homeowners are paying $1,000 more per month right now just because of these interest hikes. So basically, we need to focus on making it easier to get more homes built in this country. Canada has failed to keep up with the demand, and this government predicts over 400,000 homes need to be built every single year until 2030 just to make homes more affordable. That's twice what we currently build at the moment. But to achieve that, we need to continue to get gatekeepers out of the way.
Matt, what should the government be doing for housing right now?
Well, a couple of things the government could be doing right now. The government needs to incentivize municipalities to approve home builds and zoning. We can do this through federal infrastructure dollars to provide that incentive. Also, the CMHC, the Canadian Mortgage Housing Corporation, needs to scale back their approval processes and make it easier to get funds out the door, ultimately get more affordable homes built.
Matt, I often talk in the House on military housing that it isn't actually government that builds homes, except for when it comes to military housing. Government does build those homes. They've only built 50 since 2015. How do we push the government to build more military housing?
You know, I've been able to tour a few different places that have been successful in supporting military housing. And one that comes to mind, Homes for Heroes Foundation. Their biggest request, and actually their biggest ask, is just to sit down with government to explain how their program works, which takes a lot of private money, putting that into the government system to get homes built, essentially. But they've said they've had a very difficult time meeting with members of this government, whether it be with the bureaucracy or ministers or the prime minister's office. You know, they keep trying, but organizations like that are the future, really, in my opinion. But, you know, ultimately, the government has been short in building military housing and quite frankly, affordable housing. So we continue to see the Liberals commit to more money to get homes built. But the problem is the bureaucracy and the red tape. We need to remove the red tape, increase approvals that will get more homes built.
I had a program that I pitched when I was in Belleville City Council. I'm actually going to play the clip now.
Motions 11.1, moved by Councillor Williams. Whereas we have identified a housing crisis affecting rental units, and whereas there was a motion passed at the Housing Summit to create 1,000 new affordable rental units by 2025, be it resolved to create a secondary suites affordable rental unit program starting January 1st, 2020 that will create up to 50 secondary suites and units a year. Over 5 years, it offer affordable market rent at 80% of market rent, creating 250 to 1,000 units for affordable rental. We have $80 million in our bank account in reserves for different things. They're all there and allocated for different things, but it's there. And providing loans from the city of $25,000 paid back to the city over 15 years.
That program was actually going to provide more secondary suites and coach houses, existing buildings where we could provide 0% loans as long as residents provided affordable market rent, which was 80% of the average market rent. So instead of $1,500, say $1,200, if they provided a rental unit in their home. It did actually three things. One, it would provide rental units across the city and across this region. Number two, it would make sure that people who perhaps are finding the pinch from interest rates could keep their homes. And number three, it provides jobs. We need jobs, tradespersons to build those. So it's a win-win-win, in my opinion. I'm looking to bring this motion to the government in order to see this happen from the Canadian aspect, Canadian side. Matt, tell me about what you think about this.
This is absolutely great. This is what we need to do. We need to be coming up with more of these innovative approaches to housing and to affordable housing, affordable rental housing. You know, the program pitch to Belleville City Council when MP Ryan Williams was a city councillor is an exact example of where we need to go. You see the ability to take a basement suite and turn it into either a rental opportunity or a way to get more people into the trades and turn roll back into jobs. All of this is a prime example of where we should be innovative on the housing file. And you know, I certainly support MP Ryan Williams, private members. Motion to bring this forward, and hopefully we'll see a lot more of that collaborative approach in this parliament if we really do truly want to make more housing affordable in this country.
Housing is an issue that needs to be declared a crisis, and we need to make sure we do everything as a nation until it is solved. Housing or shelter should be a fundamental right, and we need to treat it as such. We also need to be innovative. We need to make sure that we're coming up with new solutions to build housing. And the government's role is to ensure we incentivize and we remove regulations for all of the different aspects that are blocking housing development. Today, we talked earlier about setting targets from the federal government. We need to absolutely set targets, but not only set them, make sure we are ensuring that we're living up to those targets. And that's the only way we're going to see housing built in this country. I will continue to push hard for housing solutions in the House on behalf of you and everyone in our region. Thank you to our guests who joined us today. Thank you to Ruth Eswick, CEO of the Quinney Home Builders, Vino Nirona from Not Alone Team, Bob Cottrell and Phil Spry, who talked about affordable housing, and thank you to Matt Genereux, the housing critic for the Conservative Party of Canada. Thank you again to In Quinney, who produces this series, and every month, we will come back either revisiting a topic or a new topic that I'm experiencing and I'm listening to you on your behalf as your member of parliament in the Bay of Quinney, representing you in the House of Commons in Ottawa. If you have any questions anytime, please call us at 613-969-4444. 3300 or email ryan.williams@parl.gc.ca. Thank you very much for listening to us, and we'll see you next time in the house.